And you're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
Ethnic cleansing is at the center of the creation of the Jewish State of Israel. For Palestinians, that catastrophe called the Nakba is self-evident, a vibrant part of their collective memory. But for most Israeli Jews, the Nakba has been excised from memory. Indeed, when the subject is raised, the response oscillates between denial and anger. Leah Tarachansky is completing a documentary film focused directly on the denial of ethnic cleansing in Jewish Israeli culture. Leah Tarachansky's family emigrated from the Soviet Union to Israel in 1991, and she's a journalist in Israel for the Real News Network. We've reached Leah in Toronto, where she's speaking at a conference of the Canadian group Independent Jewish Voices. Hello, Leah.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks so much for taking time out of your conference to speak with us. We appreciate it.
Sure, it's kind of on topic.
I guess so. Now, the working title for your documentary is Seven Deadly Myths. Is there a unifying idea to the those myths?
Yeah, actually, that, the more accurate part of that sentence is working title. When I started working on the film, being a journalist, I wanted to make a very journalistic film, the kind of film that basically would challenge everything that I learned in school growing up in Israel about the creation of Israel, the history of Israel and Zionism, and specifically around 1948. And I structured the film around the book that Simcha Flapan wrote in 1987, a book that basically unified a lot of the findings of the new historians in the 80s into one sort of collective book that examined myths and realities of the birth of Israel. And I finished filming that film 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and realized that the facts don't make a difference when you talk about the Nakba with Israelis. What matters more is the memory of the facts and the denial of the memory of the facts. And so what ended up happening instead is that I found people who themselves fought in the war, and through their stories and their experiences, I started exploring the memory of the facts more than the facts themselves. And the title of the film is probably going to change from its working title to the title Remains, because that word incorporates both the present and the past, and sort of inherently signifies a struggle. And, of course, we know that millions of Palestinians remain in refugee camps as a result of what happened in that year. But the more you talk to the people who were actually there, and me as someone who grew up in a settlement in the middle of the West Bank, you start to understand that we didn't only erase, you know, more than 500 villages off the map, and we didn't only, you know, erase the history from our textbooks, and just the Palestinians more or less existence out of our consciousness, but we also erased it out of our own memories and out of our own collective identity. And that's what the film is about.
Let me ask you about the people that you interviewed about their memories of the who participated in the war. What did you learn about their memories from your interviews?
Well, you know, what I found was really interesting. I found that their approach to 1948, it being only 3 years after the Holocaust that all of this happened in Mandate Palestine, their approach was very similar to my grandfather's approach when it comes to the Holocaust. They couldn't. There's parts of their memories that they could not reopen. And in no way is the Nakba similar to the Holocaust. But when it comes to speaking about these memories, the reaction of the people is very similar. My grandfather couldn't talk about his memories until, you know, the last years of his life. And when it comes to talking to these veterans who are now in their 80s and 90s, you know, some of them, you know, would open up about 1948 and the 40s in general and recall, you know, these exciting and yet, you know, terrifying years where it wasn't sure that what's going to happen to the Jews. I mean, the Western world didn't want them. Europe didn't want the Jews after the Holocaust. Canada had the, you know, none is too many policy. Where were they going to go? And in Palestine, it wasn't clear. Are the Jews going to have, are we going to have any kind of piece of land with self-determination? And then the war happened, and it was exploited to ethnically cleanse, mandate Palestine, to take as much land as possible. And when you talk about the specifics of those actions, you know, people found it very, very painful to speak about them. But the more you dig into that memory with them, the more you discover, the more they themselves discover that they have erased out of their memories. And that's a really fascinating and incredibly painful process.
So the memories are there, but they just haven't accessed them for so long because they are so painful. That's the kind of situation.
Yeah, and of course, when you talk to you know, people who are refugees from 1948, you know, not their descendants, but the actual people who fled, their reaction is also very similar because, you know, the extent of the horrors of that war.
Now, your family came to Israel decades later in 1991, and there was no one in your family directly involved in the ethnic cleansing. Still, in the film, you reflect on your experience of denial. Can you talk about that?
Sure. At first, I wasn't, just like the way you asked it, I mean, I didn't see any connection between 1948 and myself. My grandma didn't expel anyone like most Israelis. I just thought, okay, I'll make this film because it's important historically. And then I went back to the settlement where I grew up, you know, after a decade of not coming back, with my editor for the Real News. And he wanted me to just say a couple of words about, you know, to the camera, you know, I'm Leah Tarachansky, I'm the correspondent, da da da, this is where I grew up. And right in the middle of him filming this thing, all of a sudden, the call to prayer started from the village next door. And as I was standing there, you know, on the hill overlooking this gigantic settlement where I grew up, you know, it's in the heart, right in the middle of the West Bank, surrounded by Palestinian villages, I realized that it was the first time in my life that I was hearing the sound. And when I was when I reflected on that, looking at the interviews that I did with the veterans, you know, a lot of them talk about, you know, Israel is a tiny, tiny country, and you drive by these places where you expelled this village, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times in your life. And one of them, Tikva Honik Palnas, who's the main character in the film, she talks about how she's driving down the road between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem with a friend who's a Palestinian, and he said, you know, Tikva, here there was a Palestinian village. And she says, no, there was no village here. And he says, yes, so-and-so, and it was expelled in this, you know, in April 1980. And she's saying that, like, you know, they drive for a few kilometers. And all of a sudden, she's flooded with this memory of course, there was a village here. Her brigade expelled that village. She used to walk among its abandoned houses and walk into the houses and see dishes on the tables, and the memory was such a pleasant memory of, you know, having this space and thinking of, okay, now this is our land, that somehow in the whole, you know, meat grinder of that war, she erased the memory and started to understand that the reason that me and people like me who grew up in settlements and even inside Israel itself are completely blind to the reality of the Palestinians is because we have no context for their history, for their culture, for the society, for what they go through on a daily basis, because we physically can't see and hear them. We erase them out of our very perception. And that is really what the film is about.
It's so interesting because, of course, as we go through our daily lives, we treat our memory as if it is a real thing. And, of course, it isn't. It's this shape-shifting, bizarre collection of what we want and what we don't want to remember.
Exactly.
Now, you came to Canada for a university education, and it's here that you had, in your words, the first real conversation with a Palestinian. Tell us about that experience.
You know, You know, I don't remember it. I don't remember what we talked about, and I don't remember what he looked like or what his name was or where he went afterwards. But I distinctly remember this feeling where I was speaking with this person, and he says, you know, I'm a Palestinian, da-da-da-da-da. And he knew I was an Israeli. And all I remember is distinctly realizing that he knows I'm an Israeli, and he's a Palestinian, and he's not trying to kill me. And I know that this sounds crazy, but this is the second Intifada years, and me growing up in a settlement in a completely insular environment where the only thing we really know about the Palestinians, who of course are not allowed in the settlement, is that they want to kill us. And it was that realization, in that micro, you know, of an experience, that maybe, just maybe, things that I know are not completely true, or are not entirely true. And once that weakest link in that sort of chain of myths falls apart, everything else collapses. And it's as anybody who's gone through that process knows, it's a huge transformative process where everything, your whole view, everything you've ever believed in, collapses, and you start to rebuild it from scratch. It's a very long and very, very painful process.
In recent years, what's been called the new Israeli historians have thoroughly documented the realities of the Jewish military ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. What impact has this had on Jewish Israeli culture?
You know, this is really a fascinating question. The new historians started with Benny Morris and Ilan Pape in the very, very end of the 70s when the new right-wing government for the first time took power in Israel. And through the 80s, they kept publishing all this information about 48 that they were free because the archives, Israel's archives, the British archives, and the UN archives opened up 30 years after 48, so in 1978. And they started digging through these archives and finding all these things about, you know, Plan Dalit and all these things that exposed a lot of what happened in 48. And they caused a complete storm in Israel in the 80s, to the point where by the time the 90s came around, you know, the history textbooks in school started to be rewritten from a very simplistic narrative that sort of guides Israeli mythology or history, as we call it, that, you know, we were completely innocent in every war, in every sense, in every way. We were attacked in every war, in every sense, in every way, for no reason, and with a miracle of God, we somehow reacted and survived. And that entire narrative started falling apart, and in the 90s, you know, school textbooks were being rewritten. And then, when the new right-wing government Netanyahu came into power, all of that stopped. And unfortunately, the new historians, while opening up that file and really challenging one of the biggest taboos in our society, failed to enter into the Israeli understanding what really happened in that war, because despite all of the press and everything that happened in the 80s and 90s, it all stopped drastically. And ironically, last year, when the current right-wing government, also of Netanyahu, approved a law called the Nakba Law, that basically forbids people from commemorating the Nakba on the Day of Independence, and anyone who is funded by a state institution, such as a school, cannot teach the Nakba. So Palestinians, 20% of Israeli citizens are Palestinians, they can't learn about the Nakba in schools anymore because of this law. They, with this law, with this extremely backwards law, made the word Nakba into a household name. And now everybody knows what the word Nakba means. It means the catastrophe of 1948 and the result of it being the millions of refugees of Palestinians. Two-thirds of the Palestinian society became refugees. Everybody in Israel now knows that this is what it means, except that we still don't know on a collective level what exactly transpired. And the only thing that survived out of that whole challenging effort is this understanding that it doesn't matter really what happened because it's justified. And one of the people I interviewed in the film Yossi McCrighton. He's one of the founders of an Israeli organization called Zochot. And in an interview, he was describing, you know, taking the bus one time from Be'er Sheva north and sitting next to this young guy, and they were passing by the ruins of some Palestinian village from 1948. And just as a small experiment, he asked this guy, do you know what this is? And just years ago, if you asked some young guy what these ruins are, he would probably say something like, it's the Roman, you know, Roman ruins or Greek ruins or whatever. But the kid says, oh, it's Palestinian ruins. But it's justified. Yes, that's how it should have happened. And that's really the prevailing narrative. That yes, maybe some things that weren't completely kosher happened, but they were justified. And it's amazing because we believe this despite of the fact that we don't actually, as a society, know what was justified, what happened, that we are so sure that it's justified.
It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you this morning, Leah, and the film. I'm really looking forward to seeing the film. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. We're currently fundraising through a crowdfunding platform called Indiegogo. So if you search for Seven Deadly Myths on Indiegogo, we're hoping to fundraise enough to edit the film now, do the post-production, and if all of that succeeds, the film will be ready in the spring.
Excellent. I will mention that information again. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Leah Tarachansky. She's a filmmaker and journalist for the Real News Network. And I'm going to give you two websites. If you want to see footage from Leah's documentary, you can go to leichik.webs.com. And Leichik is L-E-I-C-H-I-K. If you would like to help fundraise to get them through the next part of the process, the final editing of the film, if you'd like to send them money, you're going to search on Seven Deadly Myths and Indiegogo, and that should get you to a site where you can donate.